chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Bob TD on the show today. Bob is a blogger at leadingwithquestions.com and the author of 6 popular books, including his latest book, Leading with Questions. So I am delighted today to have Bob TD on the Something Extra podcast. Bob, welcome to the show. I am so grateful to have this time with you. Thank you for making the time.
Lisa, I'm delighted. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I told you we've got so much to talk about. And so we're going to try to cram it all in, you know, into this one episode. But I have to always give a shout out to how these connections happen. And you and I have a mutual friend, Eric Eager. And he connected us and said, Lisa, you need to meet Bob. And then when I really started learning more about you, Bob, I'm like, we have so many mutual friends, Cheryl Batchelder, Dr. Richard Blackaby, Mark Miller. And so, yeah, we could probably spend a whole podcast just talking about all those amazing people, right?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. So, Bob, I cannot wait to dig into what you're doing today, but I know that you grew up in South Dakota. So you live in Plano, Texas now, but you didn't grow up there. You grew up in South Dakota. You graduated from the University of South Dakota, and you have served on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ CRU for 51 years. Which is a long time. Tell me a little bit about that journey. And I know that you were with Josh McDowell for a while. And tell me about that journey.
Well, Lisa, first, you know, your friend Bob obviously has no ability to get a new job. You know, how many people have been with the same organization for 50 plus years? And, you know, it goes way back. People say, well, how'd this all get started? Well, my freshman year at the University of South Dakota, joined a fraternity, and just a few weeks into that experience, a group of fraternity men from Iowa State came and were our Monday evening speakers. Now, it turns out they were all involved with Campus Crusade for Christ at Iowa State, and so 3 of them shared how they'd come to know Christ at Iowa State. The 4th one shared something called the 4 spiritual laws. And end it with offering to pray a prayer we could pray along silently if we chose to invite Jesus into our heart. And I remember praying. And then a month or two later, we didn't have staff at the University of South Dakota. Staff from Iowa State came for a couple of days, and they reached out to me and met with me, and they gave me a brochure for a Christmas conference in Chicago. This farm boy had never really been out of South Dakota, never been on a jet plane, but flew to that Christmas conference in Chicago, over 1,000 students from the Big Ten. And remember the last night of that conference, one of the speakers said, many of you come from campuses where we don't have staff. We wish we had staff for all your campuses, but we don't. And we're praying and asking that God will call many of you to lead the movements on your campus. If you're willing to do that, I'm asking you to stand. Lisa, I remember standing. I knew almost nothing. but I later heard the greatest ability any of us can give the Lord is availability. Well, I guess that's what I was giving. And went back. There was myself and two women from University of South Dakota at that conference. And we launched what I kiddingly call Conference Crusade for Christ, because we didn't have staff. Every time there was a conference or retreat, we recruited students to go. And fast forward our senior year, we took over 100 students from South Dakota to the Christmas conference. And but I look back and say it was really that first step when I stood and said, hey, I'll do this. And no, I didn't think that was a commitment for 50 years, but it turns out that was the first step. And then our first assignments were on campus ministry, Colorado, the state of Washington, Oregon. In 79, the national director of crew at that time played matchmaker and brought Josh McDowell and myself together. The Josh McDowell Ministry is a division of crew. And for the next 24 years, I had the privilege of directing the Josh McDowell Ministry. And we could fill multiple podcasts with just the stories. The doors to Russia opened, led 18 major mission trips to Russia. The doors to Cuba opened. And just incredible, only God kind of stories. But we stepped away from Josh McDowell Ministry, that role, in 2003. We took a sabbatical. Crew, when we were done with the sabbatical, brought us seven opportunities. And the one that resonated that God called us to was leadership development. And so I've been on the U.S. leadership development team now for 20 years. And the mission is simple: develop the next generation of leaders. And Lisa, I say that something that's true of every organization, not just crew, but any organization, is that in 15 to 20 years, almost none of the current leaders of that organization will still be leading. In their places will be the leaders they're now developing. And if they fail to be developing that next generation, like the current leaders just kind of think, we'll live forever, well, that organization won't fail today, tomorrow, next month, next year, but it may fail 15 to 20 years from now. And so we take very seriously the stewardship of our emerging leaders, knowing they will become the leaders. So that's what I'm involved with now, Lisa.
I love it. I love it, Bob. Well, you know, you've kind of talked a little bit about this, but you and your wife, you're married to, your wife is Sherry.
Yes.
Right? And you've got four adult married children, eight grandchildren who call you Papa Bob. I mean, you have had such a rich life, Bob, you know, with that 50 years in crew, because now you've written, I'm going to read just a few of your books, and I want you to tell our listeners how they can get these books. But I have devoured your books. I love it, because you're all about one of the traits of a really good leader. In fact, you say that a leader who can learn to ask good questions will be 10 times more effective than just telling. And I think you've got some personal stories about that as well. But sure. You've got 262 questions that Paul the Apostle Christ asked, Little Book of Big Quotes. Now that's a great question. I have a lot of these books here. Great Leaders Ask Great Questions, 339 questions that Jesus asked. And then your latest book, which I think just came out in April, right? That was published by Wiley, is Leading with Questions. So I'm hoping that you're going to send me one of those. But how can our listeners, go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get these books. Yes.
Well, Lisa, all five of my first books are free ebooks. And if they'll simply go to my blog, leadingwithquestions.com, just write in, type in those words, leadingwithquestions.com. At the top, you'll see the word books. If you click on it, you'll see all the free ebooks. They're available in multiple languages, and quite a few are also available as audiobooks, MP3s that you can download just like this podcast to your smartphone and listen as you walk, run, drive, bike, sit in a rocking chair, or just sit. but all available for free. And, you know, my heart is to help leaders everywhere increase their effectiveness by moving from leading by telling to leading with questions. And so that's why we make all of this free. Now, I did mention, you did ask, the newest book is not free. It is published by Wiley. It's available on Amazon. It was first released in April. And for the first 60 days, it was on Amazon, their number one bestseller in the category of business communication. We were just thrilled. Well, it's still available on Amazon. It'll be available for a long time. But just go there, type in Leading with Questions, and you'll find. Now, there's two previous editions, so do look for the third edition, which is blue. The cover is blue, and identify it. And we're not on hoping you buy it. We hope you'll buy multiple copies to give to your friends and colleagues and clients.
Right. Do a book club. Do a book club at your business, you know, because really communication is so critical. It is so critical. And, you know, you talk a lot about this concept of asking better questions, Bob, you know, leading with a question. But when did this click for you? And I think I read somewhere where you said that you are a recovering teleholic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lisa, whenever I speak, I start with a confession. And my confession is, and this is absolutely true, for most of my career, I was a benevolent dictator because my only paradigm of leadership was that I thought the job of a leader was to tell staff what to do, to give them direction. I did say benevolent. I grew up in a home where I was taught to say please and thank you. So Lisa, if you've been on my team, I don't think I would have ever said, hey, Lisa, go do this. It'd been, hey, Lisa, you know, this week we're working on this. It'd really be nice if you could please do this. And Lisa, right. When you did it, I would have said, Lisa, thank you. At a staff meeting, Lisa, stand up. You all need to hear what Lisa did. And I don't want to suggest that we got nothing done, but my only paradigm of leadership was the job of a leader is to tell staff what to do. Mm-hmm. And for me, that changed in 2006. I don't remember the exact day, but I remember exactly where I was. I was in a Borders bookstore. And Sherry loves to go to bookstores. She goes all over the bookstore. She knows when she's done, I'll still be in the leadership section. And my habit is to pull off 2-3 books I've never seen before, peruse them to see if anyone's going home. And on that day, I found the first edition of Leading with Questions by Dr. Michael Marquardt. I bought it. It was a page turner. And it was filled with stories, just like the third edition is, but stories of leaders literally from around the globe, not just the U.S., and sharing that not only were they leading with questions, but the questions they were using. And as I read it, Lisa, I only had one question. Why hasn't anyone ever shared this paradigm with me before? And I was already on the leadership development team. I began to teach out of the book. I put 8 sessions together on leading with questions. And that's what launched me. Finding the first edition of Leading with Questions in 2006 changed my leadership forever. And at the time, I had no idea they would actually even give me a new direction that I was going that would expand far beyond just crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, and then you're teaching other people to do that now. You know, so I want to dig into this. I want to talk about some of those questions, Bob. I want to talk about what it means when you're asking your colleagues and with the people in your organization the questions rather than telling them. But what do you believe are some of the attributes of a great question?
Well, Lisa, there are all sorts of questions, okay? And a lot of times we ask, and I would say it's a good question, we ask questions for our benefit. I don't know the answer, and so I say, hey, Lisa, where could I find? Or how would you do this? But I'm asking for my benefit. Now, keep in mind, nothing wrong with doing that. But I kind of put that in the category of a good question. But then I have a category of better questions, and then rather than the best, I call them platinum. But let me give an example of the difference between good and better. I actually got this from a mom. A mom was telling me, she said, every day when my daughter came home from school, I'd say, honey, how was school today? And she'd say, I was lucky to get a one-word answer. Good, boring, okay, but end of conversation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she said, I was the picture of insanity. I kept using the same question every day, wondering why I wasn't getting better answers. She said, well, one day I decided, okay, I've got to change my question. So daughter comes home from school and she says, honey, tell me about your day. And she said, at first, I didn't know if she'd heard me. I didn't know if she was going to respond. There was silence for quite a while. But she said, then she began to speak and she didn't stop for the next 5 minutes telling me about her day. And so there's an example of the difference between a good question. It's good mm-hmm. to say, honey, how was school today? You're showing interest. But the better question is, tell me about your day. Now, I have a similar little story. My son, he's got a business. Well, I was kept asking kind of the same question that mother was asking. I'd say, Bill, how's business going? End up getting a one-word answer. Okay, challenging. You know, it's doing fine, but one word. Mm-hmm. And I realized, wait a minute, how could I ask a better question? And I, Lisa, another thing I do is I don't often come up with the better questions. I find them. You can steal them. You can collect them. They don't have to be original. But I right. read somewhere, hey, here's a better question. And so I said, hey, Bill, how would you describe business today in comparison to your business a year ago? And suddenly, wow, I get a 5-minute answer. Mm-hmm. So there's a better question. But then a so platinum question, I put that in the category of rather than it only benefiting me, Lisa, when somebody asks you a platinum question, I say it's like one of those antique keys that unlocks a lockbox, and it actually unlocks something in you where you, as you begin to respond, first of all, it's not a gotcha kind of question. It's a question that you begin to think about, you think, wow, I've never been asked this before. And out come some things. They were always there, but out come some things and you think, wow, Bob, thank you. That was a great question. I've never thought about that before. So it actually unlocks something within you. And in this little book of quotes, I share that my favorite quote, and it relates to what we're talking about right now, comes from Proverbs 20, verse 5. A person's thoughts are like water in a deep well, but someone with insight can draw them out. And so it's that platinum is when we draw out those deep thoughts that somebody else has. And
I could not agree with you more, because those platinum questions, like you said, it's in there, but you've never even really voiced that before because you've not been asked that question. It really helps you be a little bit more introspective, I think, yeah. Bob.
You enjoy answering it. Yes. Lisa, you know, we mentioned earlier, one of our mutual friends is Cheryl Batchelder. And Cheryl, in her wonderful book, Dare to Serve, she was the CEO of Popeye's Chicken for many years. And she wrote this book, Dare to Serve. And one of the questions she asks in there is, how well do you know your staff? Do you know the 3 or 4 events that have most shaped their lives? Well, Lisa, when I read that, this is true for me. Whenever I read or hear a great question, I can hardly wait to find somebody to ask. And I had just read that. And 30 minutes later, I was on a coaching call. I have the privilege of coaching one of my crew colleagues in Canada, who's the Associate Leadership Development Director in Canada. His name is Neil. I've known Neil since 2007. We're good friends. I actually thought I knew Neil's whole story, but I just read this question, jumped on the call. We were on video seeing each other. I said, Neil, I've just read a great question. I'd love to ask it. He said, Bob, you know I love great questions. What's the question? I said, Neil, what would you say are the 3 or 4 events that have most shaped your life? Now, Lisa, I didn't expect to learn anything new. I just thought it would be fascinating. Of all the things I know about Neil, what would he say are the 3 or 4? Well, it turns out I was wrong. Neil said, well, Bob, have I ever shared with you that my birth father died when I was 9 months old? I said, no, Neil, I don't know that story. He said, well, Bob, my mother later remarried, and the man who's really my stepfather is a man who in my heart is my dad, because he's the only dad I've ever known. But he said, it has been shared with me so many times that in the final weeks of my birth father's life, he knew he was dying. He was in a big bed at home, and every day he would ask to hold me. And as he would hold me, he would pray over me and ask that God, the Heavenly Father, would be a father to this little boy that he knew he would not live to raise. As Neil shared that, Neil began to have tears. We're on video. His tears caused me to have tears. And, you know, my question, his answer, I don't know, 3-4 minutes. And a relationship that was already good suddenly went deeper. And this has become one of my favorite questions. And let me just say, the most emotional response I ever received was that very first time I asked it. But every single time I ask, it's fascinating. And every single time I put it as one of those platinum questions, again, I got it, collected it from Cheryl Batchelder, not original with me. But it's one of those platinum questions, because almost every time somebody says, wow, Bob, I've never had that question before. That was fun to think about and to think, what are those 3 or 4 events? And so there's an example of a platinum question.
Oh, so good. I love that. Well, goodness gracious. Yeah, we've got so much here to talk about, but you've got somebody may be listening right now, Bob, and they may be like thinking, now you can go on and rip off and duplicate all of Bob's questions or listen to, you know, for those platinum questions. But, you know, somebody may be thinking, well, I'm just not good at asking questions. I can't think of questions. And you have a formula, really, that you kind of, and you say, here's 4 questions to memorize. What do you think? You know, you ask a team member, what do you think about this? How does that make that team member feel? Bob?
Lisa, yeah, I think of Thoreau. I love this quote from Thoreau. He said, the greatest compliment ever paid me was when one asked me what I thought and then attended to my answer. Now, I wouldn't normally use that attended to my answer, but I like the way he said it.
Yes.
And Lisa, just think about whenever we've had somebody we report to say, hey, Lisa, what do you think we might do here? How did that make you feel? How does that make anyone feel?
Respected.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like my voice matters. It makes me feel like I have something to contribute when I'm asked, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, think about that. But you said, this is funny. You go, start with, what do you think? Then listen, you know, attentively to that answer. And then the second one is, what else?
Well, Lisa, if I can back up just a little bit, whenever I'm speaking, I ask the audience, who here would like to learn to lead with questions in 30 seconds? And every hand goes up. And I said, well, the reason I'm asking this is a lot of times I sense from my audience that they would like to learn to lead with questions, but they imagine they're going to have to get a master's degree in questionology. You know, it's like, it'd be nice to be a brain surgeon and make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but probably not going to happen. For, you know, for most of us.
Right.
And I said, so when I say who would like to learn to lead with questions in 30 seconds, it's like, yeah, sign me up for that class. And then, Lisa, I always invite an audience member up. And I say, now I've got a second hand on my watch, but we're just going to see if this is really possible. And so, again, whoever I pick to come up, as they come up, I say, you know, I've chosen you because I think you have a photographic memory. And they always look at me like, yeah, I don't think so. And I say, well, I think you do. All you're going to have to do is to memorize my 4 favorite questions. And you'll be able to lead with questions. And so here's how the clock's going to work. It's going to start when I start saying, here's my first question. And I share all 4. I'm then going to say, do you have them memorized? And if you say yes, I'm going to say, share them. And if you successfully share all four, the clock stops at the end of the fourth question. So here we go. And I say, my first favorite question is, what do you think? Second, what else? Third, what else? Fourth, what else? Do you have them memorized? Lisa, every single time they have them memorized. They share them. And usually the clock is at about 20 seconds. And I say, wow, you've broken the record. And but then I look at the audience and say, I can see some of you are skeptical. Like, Bob, you can't ask somebody, what do you think? What else? What else? What else? And I say, well, of course, not in that rapid fashion. It's a conversation. And you're going to tie a topic to what do you think? Hey, what do you think we ought to do about this opportunity? What do you think we ought to do about this challenge? What do you think we ought to do about this situation? There's going to be a topic. And when you ask, they're going to give you an answer. But when they pause, instead of just moving on like, hey, that was their answer, at that point say, wow, this is good, Lisa. What else? And I share that instinctively, again, it's not that we think this through, but instinctively, when somebody asks, hey, what do you think about, we roll out a safe answer to see how they receive it. So Lisa, if I said, hey, what do you think about something? You give me that first answer. And I said, well, Lisa, that's dumb. Everyone knows that. You're sorry you answered. I'm going to get nothing. In fact, right. Next time I ask, I'll get nothing. But when I say, wow, Lisa, that's good. What else? Well, you relax. You're feeling respected, appreciated, and you'll give me more. And then, again, you'll pause at some point. But rather than just moving on, I'll tend to grab a pen and say, Lisa, I've got to take notes. This is so good. Please say more about this. What else? Mm-hmm. And what I've discovered is we actually get to your gold nugget, your very best thought, with the third and fourth question. And we've all heard the story of, you know, the proverbial gold miner, the guy who mined for gold all his life looking for the gold vein, never found it. He finally quits. Somebody comes along later and discovered he was within 6 inches of the gold vein when he quit. Mm. Well, if you only ask the first question, hey, what do you think? And then you move on, you're like that proverbial gold miner. You got close, but you got to dig a little with the third and fourth question to get to the gold nugget.
Oh, that is good. And then love that.
Yeah, one more thought here. Remember, my question was, who would like to learn to lead with questions in 30 seconds? If you've been a leader who only leads like I once did by telling staff what to do, one of the things I love about leading with questions is so many of the greatest questions are so simple. They're not long, complicated, like how in the world would I ever remember to ask that kind of question? In your next staff meeting with staff one-on-one or with your team around the conference table, just using these four questions. Hey, gang, here's this opportunity. What do you think we might do? And then listen. And then as they respond, wow, that's good. What else? And what else? And what else? You will have moved from leading by telling to leading with questions with just these four questions. And yes, there's a few more you can ask. But again, I'm repeating myself. What I love about leading with questions is so many of the best questions are so simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll talk about lots more of those, Bob. You know, the thing that I love about all of this is sometimes people just think, oh, you know, if you've got a growth mindset, Bob, there's most things you can learn, you know, even if you need to be more empathetic or, you know, whatever it is, these are things that you can learn, but you got to practice them. You're right. You got to practice them. I bet you practice a lot on Sherry. Your test case. Well, you know what, Bob? We've got so much more I want to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Bob Teede on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Bob Teede. So, Bob, you talk about a consultant that you know that has really handsomely been compensated, and he's done that with just four questions. Can you tell us more about that story?
Oh, I can, Lisa. Delighted. Yes, I met this consultant. He shared with me that he's not a subject matter expert. He said, they don't invite me in because I have expertise in a certain category. And he said, in fact, on day one, I could be consulting with the head of an airline company. On day two, the head of a pharmaceutical company. On day three, the head of a software company. He said, I'd ask the same four questions. And he said, by any chance, would you be interested in knowing the four questions? I said, not only interested, can I write them down? He said, well, I'd be disappointed if you didn't. And he said, here are the four questions. Question one is, what's going well? Question two, what's not? Question three, where are you stuck? Question four, what needs to change? And he then circled question one that I'd written down. He said to Bob, don't miss question one. He said, whenever I'm consulting, I start with what's going well. He said, here's the reason. If I started with question two, I would not get an honest answer. He said, no one at 8 a.m., here I am, a new client, 8 a.m. in the morning, and I start with what's not going well. He said, no one wants to get naked at 8 a.m. and confess, yeah, we're a bunch of losers here. So he said, you wouldn't get an honest answer. So I start with what's going well. Now, he has a whole bunch of what else, and tell me more. And he said, by the time we're done with question one, they're thinking that I'm thinking they're one of the most brilliant leaders I've ever spent time with. He said, that creates a safe atmosphere in which I then ask, well, what's not? And he said, when I ask what's not, he said, instead of feeling like they're confessing, yeah, we're a bunch of losers, it's kind of like, use baseball. Despite all the games we've won, despite all the home runs, all the runs batted in, yeah, we've had a few strikeouts, a few errors. We've lost some games. And he said, I actually get the true story. And then he said, but notice question three and four. Guess who solves the problems for them? They do.
Themselves.
Yeah, he said, I asked, where are you stuck? And they begin to detail all. And again, he has some more what else's and tell me about this and describe that. And then what needs to change? And he said, at the end of the day, they write me that big check and they thank me for being a brilliant consultant. When in fact, their answers to my questions, they've actually solved their own issue. Well, Lisa, those four questions are some of my favorite. Again, they're simple. Yes. What's going well? What's not? Where are you stuck? What needs to change? If you can use those with your team, you can use them with your family. If you're on a committee, a nonprofit group, a board of directors, and you come into the first meeting and you say, hey, I'm new here. Might I ask a couple questions? What would we say has been going well with this organization? What's not? Where are we stuck? What needs to change? Not only will you have incredible insight, your fellow board members are going to think, wow, we are so delighted. We invited Jenny to be on this board. We invited Lisa to be on this board. Because, wow, the wisdom of four questions.
Yeah. So good. Well, Bob, you talk about one of the things that you talk about in one of your books, and I can't remember exactly which one because I've read a lot of them. Liz Wiseman, which I love her book, Multipliers.
Yes.
But you had read that book. And the question is, are you a diminisher or a multiplier of people. And I just, it reminds me a little bit, and I bet you've read this book, Bob, How Full Is Your Bucket? You know, either we make withdrawals from someone's bucket or we're making deposits. You know, tell me a little bit more about being a diminisher versus a multiplier. And, you know, here's the deal. We want to be multipliers, well, not diminishers.
Lisa, I remember so clearly, I was attending one of the global leadership summits, and Liz Wiseman was on the schedule. I'd never heard her speak before, but I saw that her topic was going to be multipliers. And I kind of, you know, entered the session thinking, hey, this is going to be great. She's going to be talking about leaders like me, multipliers. And she started with talking about diminishers. Now, again, I'd never heard her speak. I mean, I could understand, okay, diminisher, but I didn't think that was me. But she began to contrast. And as she contrasted, I realized, wait a minute. She's saying I'm a diminisher. and it's like she said, when you bring a diminisher a problem, they solve it for you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, yeah, I love when staff come with problems and I solve it for them. But she said that was a diminisher quality. And then next she said, when you bring a diminisher an idea, they say, wow, Lisa, great idea. But you know, if you also added this and this and this, it would really strengthen it. And again, I thought, well, I love to do that. I love it when staff bring ideas, and I've got ideas on how to add horsepower. She said, you probably have no idea your staff are actually walking away thinking, I'm never bringing him or her another idea, no matter whatever I bring is never good enough. Well, I had no self-awareness, or you could say no emotional intelligence to know that. And she said, when a diminisher asks you to take on a new responsibility, they want to give you the responsibility, but not the authority. Plus, they're going to actually tell you how to wind your watch. And I thought, wow, when I asked people to take on new assignments, I thought I was being helpful. But Lisa, if I'd asked you, you'd been on the team, I'd have said, hey, Lisa, I want to ask you to do X. Would you pull out, you know, some notepaper? Let me tell you what will be required for you to do that. And I'd give a detailed step-by-step instruction on how you need to climb this mountain. Thinking again, I was being helpful. And she labeled all three of those things as diminisher qualities and said a multiplier, on the other hand, you bring them a problem, they'll ask you some questions to allow you to solve your own problem. You bring them a new idea and they'll say, wow, great idea. Tell me more about your idea. And maybe the only question they'll ask is what could I do to help? But they don't try to tell you how to do it better. And third, when a multiplier asks you to take on a new assignment, they not only give you responsibility, but authority. And they say, Lisa, I'd like you to go draft the strategic plan on how to get that done and then bring it back to me. But in other words, you let them write the plan on how they want to climb the mountain. And I've never forgotten that session. And it related again to leading with questions. Instead of being the teller, the multiplier is the asker.
Yeah, so good. Oh my goodness. Well, Bob, one of the questions I'll give our listeners this, you said, you know, you're meeting someone for the first time. What's your favorite question to ask them?
Lisa, I'd love just to know your story.
Tell me your story.
Tell me.
You said that's your favorite question. And you learned so much about that person, right? And so there's an example.
One of the reasons I like that question is, probably prior to that question, I might have asked, hey, Lisa, tell me what you do. Now, that's not a bad question if you're productively employed. But if you just lost your job last week, and you don't have a job currently, it's kind of awkward to answer. And or hey, tell me about your family. Again, if you're happily married and everything's going great, you're delighted to tell about your family. But maybe there's a prodigal child that just has you wiped out. And or maybe you're going through a rough spot in your marriage, or maybe you've even are separated. At any rate, tell me about your family. 80% of the time may be fine, but that 20%. And when I discovered, again, the better question, tell me your story, it allows you to answer however you want. You don't have to go into any painful. Now, sometimes people do. They feel comfortable enough, but it's at their initiative. You haven't backed them in a corner to tell you something. But it mm-hmm. allows them to tell their story. And so many times, Lisa, it's such a simple question, tell me your story. But it turns out that it's one of those platinum questions because they've never really been asked by anyone to tell them their story. And so as they're thinking through it, it's kind of like, huh, I had not thought about that part of my life in a long time. And they enjoy mm-hmm. sharing it.
Yes. I think that's so good. I think that there's a lot of self-awareness in that, Bob, because, you know, or, you know, tell me about, do you have children? Tell me about your children. Well, what if you're a couple that has not been able to have children, you know, and then that brings up some really painful emotions, you know? So really tell me your story, like you said, really allows that person to craft that however they would like. So I just think, I mean, honestly, we could go on and on and on and on. I mean, I told you that your books, and I hope our listeners will go and get your books. I hope that they will go to Amazon and buy the new book, Leading with Questions, published by Wiley. These do not, yes, right. It's a blue book. Dude, you know, the thing is, these are not one and done books. I said, really and truly, your books, Bob, need to be reference books that we leave on our desk, that we refer to often. And again, the thing I love about this, we can get better at it. We can get better at asking, you know, those platinum questions. But, you know, one of the things I love about your books is you've got these different quotes and mantras, and you've already quoted a few of those, but here's a few. This was by a Nobel Prize winner. You can tell whether a man is clever by his answers, but you can tell whether a man is wise by his questions. And I think that is beautiful. You quote Eric Schmidt, who's the CEO of Google. And I think this is really a funny quote. He goes, "We run this company on questions, not answers." And I think that's good. Michael Dell, founder and CEO of Dell, asking a lot of questions opens new doors to new ideas, which ultimately contribute to your competitive advantage. So
yes.
We've got these sprinkled all throughout. And it's another testament to why we need to get good at asking better questions, platinum questions.
And Lisa, and I go back to so many of the best questions are so simple. They're not long, complicated kind of things. Mm. Now, Lisa, here's a question for you. If you're going to ask somebody a question, what do you then need to do?
Listen.
Yes.
Attentively listen.
Lisa.
Active listening.
How do I ask this question? Who here would like to become a better listener in 8 seconds? There, Lisa's got her hand in the air.
Now, yes.
Lisa, what sport has an 8-second clock? Might you know?
I don't know. What is it?
Bull riding.
Bull riding?
Yeah.
Okay.
A bull rider, to have a qualified ride, has to stay on the bull for 8 seconds. And we can think 8 seconds is nothing. Well, 80% of the bull riders are knocked off in less than 8 seconds. So that's why 8 seconds is like an eternity. And you're thinking, well, what does that have to do with being a better listener? Here's what research shows. This is really fascinating. The average person, when they ask a question, only waits 2 or 3 seconds for an answer. To wait longer, that silence seems like an eternity. And so 80% when they ask a question are knocked off the ball in 2 or 3 seconds. And so you can become a better listener by simply ask the question, count silently to yourself, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Lisa, there's times I've gotten to 1,030. But the longer the silence, the better the answer. And, don't be, again, the average person asks, only gives 2 or 3 seconds, and then either re-asks the question, answers the question themselves, or just moves on in the conversation, but no self-awareness of what they've just done. And and so by just asking and waiting. Now, if I asked, if I was in your office, hey, Lisa, which way to the restroom? I'm going to get an answer in 2 or 3 seconds. But if I said, Lisa, I've got a question for you, what would you say or what might you say has been one of your greatest failures that has led to one of your greatest successes? If you've never been asked that question before, how likely are you going to be able to start speaking in 2 or 3 seconds?
Not very likely.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to think about it.
How helpful would it be if I ask another question at 2 or 3 seconds?
Yeah.
No, but if I'll just wait, give you silence.
Sure.
I could well be
the power of the pause. It's the power of the pause, Bob. And most people, it feels uncomfortable, And so people just, like you said, just move on to the next question but there is power in that pause. So I love that. I love that analogy of the bull rider. So Bob, I have to ask you, this has been so much fun. I literally think I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but I do have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. I think I know what you're going to say, but what is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
Well, it is that leadership is not as much about knowing the right answers as it is about asking the right questions.
Very good. Very good. Well, Bob, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It has been just a true delight for me to have you.
Lisa, it's been my pleasure. And let me give you a platinum star because you've led throughout this session with great questions.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.